Hello and welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat episode 29 for 2025 with myself, James Gordon and Mike Parsons. We're back following the end of the season, of course, and the first round of the Championship playoffs last week. But before we get in, in this episode, we've got a load of your questions to run through. We'll talk about Widnes's first new signing for 2026. And we'll start, Mike, with the news on the women's team who are flying the flag. Their season's still very much alive and kicking. You went down to watch them at the weekend. How did it go?
They went really well. In case anybody's obviously been living under a rock, but obviously the women now have qualified for the semi-final against Stanley this Sunday. But as for Sunday just gone, they took on Lee Miners, and I've got to be honest, James, the first half, it was a very competitive game. I was watching the Lee Miners team, and I've got to be honest, they didn't look like a team who finished seventh in the league table, that's for sure. They was chucking the ball around really well and causing Widnes a lot of problems, to be quite honest. I thought Lee's number 16 especially really stood up and really carried the ball strongly, and the hooker was quite lively as well. I think you could see that the Widnes team had obviously been out of match action for 4 weeks. That did tell in that first half. You could see the Widnes team on the whole was more advanced and had the better ability out of the two teams across the 80 minutes. The shape Widnes was setting up, they was spreading the ball left to right whenever they got given an opportunity to do so. It always seemed that it was one pass too much in that first half. And then, I mean, I've seen some questionable refereeing performances in my time, James, but the one on Sunday afternoon, I've got to be honest, the Widnes women, they got caned in the penalty count in that first half, and there was some let's say dubious decisions that went against Widnes. But credit to the girls, and Dom showed the mental toughness of that team, where as we've seen with the men this season, you know, decisions and performances from a referee when it's not going your way, it can send you off track. But not Widnes. They dug in. They started completing more sets, and I think they started going more direct in the latter stages of the second half. And they was making meters then with ease, and then they was using the ball when they was building the pressure. And, you know, the quality showed. Amy Wood was steering the team round the pitch. She's got a hell of a boots on her. Definitely one of the generals in that team. And for anybody who's going up to watch on Sunday, like myself, is a player to watch out for. I thought Jenny Moss in the middle at loose forward, I thought her inside balls feeding the forwards, like Hannah Whitehead, just beating the markers. And then the forward pack then was making 5, 10, 15 metres upfield, and the game started breaking up then. And, the halfbacks could feed from that, bringing Hannah Quirk into the game, looping out the back. And in the end, they got the job done, and I think Rachel Porter on the score sheet, and Grace and Neve Jill Ward bagged two from the left wing, and I think that kind of tells the story really of the style Widnes want to play it. That they're an attacking team and they've got a bit of flair about them, and once they started getting themselves up the pitch and getting into good ball area, they started executing. And I think if the game had gone on for 10 minutes more, I think the Widnes would have run away with it.
So tell us where they're at now then. So they've got a home playoff semi-final.
Yeah, so home semi-final, Sunday, 2 o'clock, against Stanningley. I believe there was a bit of final day drama in terms of the playoffs in the League One league, because going into the game, Fryston was in that fourth spot, who battered a set-up a game with Widnes, where Fryston was the only team to have beat Widnes so far this season. But as it's turned out, Fryston went up to third place Workington and got beat. And then Illingworth and Stanningley played each other, and they was both level on points. And Stanningley won the game 16-14, which has leapfrogged them into fourth position to take on the league leaders. Now, looking at the table, 15 points separate Widnes and Stanningley over the regular season. But as we know, James, playoff rugby is a complete different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah, and that game is going to be played at Halton Farm with Hornets.
Yes.
And if they get through to the final is on the 12th of October at Oddsall, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to be honest, James, out of all the venues in rugby league, it wouldn't have been my pick from the RFL to treat the women to a day out to Oddsall, that's for sure. Whoever makes that, got that final. Deal. But nevertheless, that is the venue, and it is do or die on Sunday. And from what I can say to people who are thinking of going, I went the Lee Miners game on Sunday, like I've just spoke about. And I say, get yourself down there. This team is a team that's really growing. There's no doubt that if they do go all the way, there is a big step up from League One into the Championship. There's no doubt about that. But they're a well-coached team by Dom. They're a physical team. I was surprised about the physicality in the middle of the park. But like I've said earlier, talking through the game, James, once they get in the groove, it really impressed me, the shapes that they was throwing at Lee Miners. And if they hit the straps, it's a fantastic team to watch. And I think, from my belief, I was watching the game on Sunday, and you always felt Widnes was in third or fourth gear. So hopefully now, playing a week ago, going into this game, the women will be, you know, more match fit, ready to go. The combinations will flow a bit better, and hopefully it'll have the recipe of seeing some really free-flowing attacking rugby.
Yeah, the women's game, I would expect to see a few changes. Obviously, we know Warrington have pulled out the Super League, so they're likely to be in the Championship. And of course, Widnes will be hoping they can go up to the Championship. I've heard that maybe Bradford and Castleford, there's a couple of question marks over their participation. They're also in the Championship at the moment. The Championship looks finally poised, really, for an extra team. It's got 11 in, so if you put Warrington in, that's 12. But of course, one of the teams in it will probably London would probably step up to Super League, London or Cardiff maybe, and then that would, of course, open up a space at the bottom for Widnes to come in. So I think it would be a good bit of progress. And you can start, with all due respect to some of the teams that you've mentioned so far, if you're in the Championship and all of a sudden you're playing Featherstone, Salford, Hull KR, Hull FC, Sheffield, maybe Bradford, it's a bit more of a... It feels a bit more high profile, or a bit more... a higher standard than playing against community clubs, basically. And although the women are, of course, amateur players themselves, the higher Widnes can be, the better for everyone.
Absolutely. The standard is a massive jump, like you've said. You read through more of the teams, and like you say, it goes from community to semi-pro names in the men's game, which means them clubs, they've got better facilities to train at, so they're going to be more prepared anyway. It's more of a gravity pull for players to go to them places. So they'll be very much playing against more established sides. But I think the thing that impresses me about the Widnes team at the moment was they triumphed in that cup final last year, and they've kicked on. They've not been happy with that, just winning the knockout competition. They've kicked on. They've lost one game 34-32. and won the league in style. And again, they're not happy just to do that either. They want to go all the way. And it's natural progression year on year on year. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they do make it towards Hull without looking too far ahead. Potentially get the job done there. And then again, it's just that natural progression, isn't it, James, of looking at the next part of the journey?
Yeah. So, yeah, get down to support the women this weekend and hopefully in the grand final. I don't know whether you got suited and booted, Mike, but you went along to the end of season awards do last week. How was that?
Really good evening, to be fair, mate. I did get suited and booted. I have my
back. To be honest,
you know what, mate? Actually, I got pulled by a few people going, "Oh, you do look smiles." Like, well, that tells the story, doesn't it? What I usually look like.
Was that your dad? Was it? To be fair, we should have maybe titled this podcast "A Week with Mike Parsons," and we could have just done your full week.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll fit you in somewhere, James, after about 20 minutes.
There was no real surprise. Well, I mean, I say there's no real surprises. Of course, Dan Murray got Players' Player of the Year and Coaches' Player of the Year, which I think was probably about right. I'm not sure. I'm not sure who your other candidates were, Mike, but Dan Murray with a deserved award.
Yeah, for me, I had it nailed on that he was going to win the coaches' award. Obviously, you don't know how players think, you know, when they're in the middle of a game. But I think you threw that stat out, didn't you, just after the Featherstone game about how many games he's played consecutively. And you know, Alan was very complimentary after that game in his interview, and just when you listen to things and you hear people speak about the fundamentals and the basics necessarily the fans like us don't see in the middle of a game, when they're highlighted, and obviously you match that with your own opinion of the guy where, you know, he is the pack leader, he's always fit, he's always an 8 out of 10, at least, and thoroughly deserved, really. And there's been times this season as well, let's not forget, that Dan's been playing in a team where we've hardly had any forwards on the pitch. We're just about naming 17 players, and to play in them games and still lead from the front and get them amount of games under his belt and the minutes and for his performance not to dip is testament to the bloke. So I think well deserved on that front for me.
Yeah, I think obviously when Liam Kirk and Martin Riley left, he was the only proper middle really who was playing, and I think you could probably point to some games where Widnes lost their way a little bit when he wasn't on. Not, he obviously has to come off at some point, but I think because they just didn't have the bodies to replace him as maybe they did at various times. I think Jack Bibby improved that situation when he came in. But yeah, I think a deserved award and probably a nice one as well for the prop forward union, because of course props don't often get the raps maybe they deserve, because the halfbacks or the wingers or the fullbacks or hookers, the ball players get the plaudits, don't they, in the end of the season awards. So probably a nice one for the prop forward union.
Yeah, I do agree, and I always like to see forwards like that be rewarded. I personally like maybe for next year to have a back of the year and a forward of the year, because it's chalk and cheese, isn't it? Like, for what Dan Murray is doing, for example, say if he did that again next year, but then Jake Mason scores 20-odd tries, how do you compare the two? And it's just an if. But it's more or less impossible, isn't it? And most people would lean towards the bloke who's running the length of the field, but he's not doing that if his forward pack ain't winning the battle in the middle, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Here's one that's a bit of breaking news just landed in my inbox. Mo Agoro signed for Hunslet. He was a name that people were linking with Widnes at one point.
just on Huntslet there where you finish, before we finish, that's, I think, a real positive sign. We've seen a lot of players jumping ship from Huntslet, but I noticed they've also retained Billy Jowett, which I thought he was outstanding at Widnes, given he was playing in a beaten team and could be playing at a higher level.
They signed a few from Rochdale as well, I believe, Huntslet. Well, we'll jump into this then on the subject of signings. Widnes announced their first one in the shape of Jordan Abdul, who I think, well, it's gone down well based on what I've seen. Of course, he was very good at Hull KR, went to Catalan for a while, got in the England team even, played a test match for England, did join Hull FC ahead of this season, but ended up leaving in the pre-season. He'd signed a three-year deal for Hull FC, so we would have only been 1 year through it now. So, although he's not played for a year and we've not seen him on the field in 2025, it's somewhat of a coup, really, for Widnes, and probably one of the best statement signings they've made. Of course, the proof will be in the pudding when he plays. But I think he's a good signing for Widnes, and maybe the sort of signing that it's good to see Widnes making in some ways.
Yeah, it sends a message out, doesn't it? The calibre of the bloke. We all know what he can do. We've seen it. It sends a message and a statement out to the fans, doesn't it? The calibre of signing and that he is and the things that he can do. He's obviously got a wicked boot, which massively helps. I can't wait to see some of them bombs go up, because usually it's us under high bombs, fumbling it everywhere. You know, we've never really had a halfback who we certainly haven't, you know, in recent time, that can put them type of kicks up that can cause chaos. So that'll be really good to see. Obviously, especially his time in London, I thought he was outstanding in that team. You've touched on the accolades he's kind of and recognition he's got already. My slight concern over it is, one, him missing a year and the transition of him going from full-time to part-time. We've seen players like this before struggle making that transition. There's no doubt about that. So that's one that's interesting to watch. But secondly is, if he's to partner Tom Gilmore, which is the most likely, I worry about a lack of pace. I was hoping to see a bit more speed injected into that area. I mean, don't get me wrong, I am not complaining whatsoever. And the guy is quality and I'm made up with the signing. But it does. Gilmore is clearly not the fastest. Abdul, I don't think, is. So you're relying on playing a style where you're bringing other players into play and going through gaps. The one thing he will do is when we're attacking teams closer to the line, could you imagine him taking the ball to the line with Adam Lawton as a runner? Both of them could go over. You wouldn't know whether to take him and leave Lawton or vice versa. But that's my only slight concern over it. But if you're going to get these type of signings, you've got to take a little bit of a risk, haven't you? And if it comes up trumps, you have definitely got one of the best halfbacks in the division in your ranks.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I'm the pace thing doesn't necessarily bother me so much, because I think you've got Mazer coming out the back. I think if you get your centres going, you can inject pace from somewhere else. I wonder whether maybe Abdul might play loose forward from time to time. Maybe. I know he played there a little bit. I wonder whether that's maybe an option in certain games. I thought it was interesting he mentioned London in his interview. He played Matty Fozard and Matt Fleming were in the London team the year he was there. So he's got, which is good from a Widnes point of view, because he's obviously got combinations with Fozard, who will surely be the first choice hooker next season, and with Matt Fleming in the centres. So that's interesting. But I think clearly it's a difficult time for rugby league. It's a difficult time for clubs. But I think he's the sort of signing that will get people thinking, oh yeah, well, I'll have a look at my season ticket for next season. And of course, that's what Widnes need at the moment.
100%, and I think I led in with it was me leading comment leading into what I said about Jordan, but that is it in a nutshell. If you were wanting people to renew the season ticket after the season didn't go to plan, the target, the mission was playoffs and we didn't make it, so if you're not getting into the playoffs and you're Widnes Vikings straight away, you are up against it in terms of bettering your season ticket sales from the previous year. Now, one way to rectify that is your recruitment being bob on. And Jordan Abdul is definitely a player people will want to turn up, pay the money and watch. And if Alan can get a tune out of him and get him anywhere near his best rugby, there's not many halfbacks after the sides that are going to go up to Super League go up. There's not going to be many halfbacks that can touch him at this level if you get Jordan Abdul at 8, 9 out of 10.
So that means Widnes have now got 18 players signed for next season. I think I've got that right, 16. I need an abacus, I think, here. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Yeah, 18 players. Not why I doubted myself, Mike. 18 players. Still question marks over Lewis Hall, who his contract did have an option for a second year. It says depending on number of appearances, but we're none the wiser what that was. Ben Condon is obviously still a maybe, but the likelihood is he's going to be playing Super League. And then Finlay Irwin, who made his debut in the last game. Not sure what's happening with him. So, 18, there'll be plenty. Well, there's going to be some more signings for sure. It'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next few weeks and months. Of course, I personally don't see there being a great deal of movement in the next 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, there'll be players that Widnes have already signed. Which I guess they might well announce in the next couple of weeks, but I'm sure there'll be players who are sitting tight waiting to see what's happening with Super League, because there'll be players at the top end of the championship who, if they fancy a full-time gig, might be able to get one, depending on who goes up. And you've also got the Salford conundrum, because who knows what's happening at Salford, but ultimately if they do take to the field next season, they're going to have to sign 20 players from somewhere. And so there's options for players, I think, at the moment is the message. So we'll see how things unfold. Right, let's move on then to some questions, Mike.
Yes, so we had quite a lot come in. Obviously, we missed a week, so thank you very much for everybody getting involved. The first one, which we can kind of brush over, was the need of a running halfback, where I think this evening, before recording, I think we've kind of got the answer, haven't we, James, where Alan's going in that department?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, obviously, Joe Lyons has signed a two-year deal, so I think it's very unlikely that you go into carry four halfbacks. Like I say, the only alternative is if maybe Abdul, he's thinking maybe Abdul plays loose forward, but you'd have to probably change the way you play quite a bit to match that. And then, of course, it's where do you play Nick Gregson? And there's all sorts of questions there. I think from that point of view, I think you're looking at Abdul and Gilmore and Lyons as the backup. I think that's where Widnes will end up entering the season. Whether you end up pulling in a third hooker, maybe you can play at halfback as well. That might be something to keep an eye on, but yeah.
I've seen just on that, like kind of a loose forward slash hooker I noticed Bailey Aldridge got released by Oldham. I was wondering for maybe a squad player. Widnes might be tempted to go for him. He got some Player of the Season awards for when they won League One, obviously due to the expenditure at Oldham. Game time's been a little bit tough for him, but he's still of a good age. Maybe someone you could come into was a bit of a squad filler, but like I say, that's just me plucking a name out the air.
Yeah. To be honest, obviously Oldham put that list out of players. I wondered whether Jack Johnson might be one, that the winger. He had a bit of a spell at Widnes a few years ago, but I wonder whether, with the situation, you know, Reece Williams retiring, you would imagine Widnes are going to be looking for a winger. Into Mike, but you would assume will be first choice, but they're going to need a third one in there. Maybe one of them, maybe he's another one to look at.
Yeah, possibly. I did see his name come up, although I don't know and I've not been informed by anybody by this, but his name come up and I just automatically assumed I could see him maybe going North Wales Crusaders like the rest of the ex-Widnes players have. But yeah, be interesting to see where he ends up. The next question, just off the back of that, less so a question, more highlighting maybe an area of improvement. Cumbria Viking says, essentially, what do we think of the pack next season? We must have four or five props, not playing players out of position to play in the prop department. What are your thoughts? I think if that's back row is playing in front row, whether people like this or not, Adam Lawton will be classed as a front rower, in my opinion, the feelings I get. There might be areas of the season where he does get utilised more out wide, but the consensus I get is he'll be utilised in the front row.
Well, I mean, the same with Liam Bent. I guess Liam Bent probably fits a similar category to that. Where people might not necessarily describe him as an out-and-out front rower, but ultimately he'll play 95% of his matches there. So I guess you'd say that Murray, McWhirter, Bent and Lawton are already in. I don't think it's a massive secret that Jay Chappellau is obviously coming back to Widnes, so he'd be another one. Jack Bibby is being released by Huddersfield. You'd like to think that Widnes will be somewhere near the front of the queue to sign him. Again, he's probably a good example of the sort of player that I mentioned before, where he might be one who fancy sitting tight to see whether a Super League club looking to fill their squad up might take him. But I guess if you did sign Bibby and Chappellau's coming in, whatever, you've already got six there. Which is a consideration, and like I've said countless times, you can't sit on a large number of frontline players. I know that there's the prospect of maybe some younger players coming through. I know that the under-18s are going to be training with the first team next season, so you never know. You might get the odd gem from there. Probably unlikely next season, but in the future, I think the reality is if you've got six front rowers in your squad, the others are going to come on dual reg or on loan. I think that's probably the reality. I think prop's the easiest position, I think, to bring players in for from dual reg clubs. I don't think Widnes will be with Warrington next season. They'll almost certainly be with somebody else. I mean, I know that front row has been an issue over the years, but it's never one that... I think it's one of them that whether you've got them in-house or whether you get them on loan, it'll come together, I think. And like we've seen this season, I think once... Even though you lost Kirk and Riley, once Jack Bibby came in and McWhirter was playing week in, week out, and Murray was obviously keeping his fitness, it looked fine.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's that middle period, isn't it? And we've had it a couple of years where you need to have, obviously, some of it is luck, certain players staying fit. But I think we do need to be going into this season with more of a core base and group. I think we did leave ourselves short. All them players that was deemed as projects who left, that wasn't the downfall of the season. But what it did do was we was having to scramble around mid-season. But when we did, in fairness to Alan, he stuck his hands up and said he's got things wrong in the recruitment drive at the start of last season. But where I do have to give him credit is people make mistakes and they've got to make up for them. And I think his mid-season recruitment, I think Ben Condon was a fan's favourite. There's no doubt about that. He definitely contributed and scored his fair share of tries. Morgan McWhirter, I think, improved year on year. I think people forget with Morgan, he's come from France, a lot slower pace. You know, he'll be better for a pre-season. Jake Mason, when he finally arrived again, Jake Mason with a full pre-season behind him, he's going to be more dangerous and a better player. Adam Lawton coming back, for me, that's the fittest I've seen. And Adam Lawton, it's as hungry as I've ever seen him. So that signing worked as well. And you throw Jack Bibby in there as well, which, similar to Morgan McWhirter, he improved as the games went on. And it's no secret where we got the Dan Murray, I think, went to a bit of another level once Jack Bibby come in. Because I think, like you pointed out, James, where Murray would go off and you was just missing something. Whereas, like, a Jack Bibby kind of player kind of carries on the baton, if that makes sense, and your performance doesn't dip. They're very similar types of middles. But I do agree, we need to be more prepared in the middle. I think the return of Jay Chappell out, I don't think I'm speaking about that like it's a done deal, because it's all over the media front. He's obviously been released by Oldham now. I imagine he'll slot into a starting front row position with Dan Murray. And then you have got the impact of Adam Lawton off the bench, which we didn't have at the start of last season. You've got Morgan McWhirter coming off the bench, which we didn't have at the start of last season. Well, this season just gone, sorry, should I say. And then if you could secure a Jack Bibby and maybe another, and you've got Bensi, then all of a sudden, then you're looking a bit more well-rounded than the start of last year. And what I will add as well is Martin Riley never got going, did he? We never seen the best out of Martin Riley in a witness shirt. And if I'm being honest, I wasn't the biggest lover of Liam Kirk, not knocking the lad at all. I'm sure he did his best, but he was never my favourite player that has put on a witness jersey.
I think there's got to be an element of luck. I get the squad size situation, but there's got to be, you've got to have an element of luck with injuries. Like Halifax only had 20 at the start of last season, and they made the playoffs. They've made the playoff semi-finals. Oldham sign every player that becomes available, and they got battered in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah, I think you've got to have an element of luck, and I think probably last season Widnes didn't perhaps. They were probably close to the bone, didn't have the luck injury-wise. The question mark over the Warrington thing is it, I think if you had a decent, I think you could probably get by if you had some decent options coming from there. But yeah, I think there's got to be people have just got to be a little bit realistic with the squad, and I'll always hold that opinion. I think if you can get to 25, fine. I think anything beyond that's possibly unrealistic, especially unless you're having project players like we saw last year, which ultimately decided it wasn't going to work because they weren't going to play. And to be fair, if you look at the three players or the four players, One of them's obviously quit the game. Sumner and Jones didn't play. I think Sumner played once or twice for Swinton. I think Jones played once, maybe. Cameron Brown played a bit for Whiteham, but then got a long ban. So it wasn't as if them three players ended up ripping up trees somewhere else. I guess probably this year, you're wanting them three slots in the squad to be filled by...
I think you've got to chuck, obviously, Brett Bailey as well and Mackenzie Buckley into that as well.
Well, and Buckley was the first I meant, but yeah. Brett Bailey, yeah, a bit of an odd one with him, but like you say, there's things that we don't know. Clearly, he didn't feel he was fit enough to play. You know, when you're down on bodies and you still can't get in the team, then
next one, which I think we have kind of touched on before, to be honest, but the average age is worrying me. We must get data from the season tickets. What are we going to do about it? And I think to answer that in short, I think that's obviously a club matter. Speaking on the topic for myself, I have mentioned it in passing conversation to plenty of people. You do go to the games now, certainly in the away games, and I am definitely one of the youngest people when you just have a glance around, and that is concerning, especially when you go to some of these away teams and the average age is pretty high. And if you're witness now, this youth development program, it's as much about of, even if some of these kids don't go on to play for Widnes and fall out the game, you keep hold of them as spectators, and they're embraced into the club and they become part of the furniture in the stands. I think that is absolutely just as important as to getting them on the field as well.
Yeah, I think Alan Coleman's made the point a few times that about getting kids wearing the badge. That's what his thought of the junior setup is as well, is that's important, getting more and more kids wearing the badge. I think the age thing, I don't think it's just a Widnes problem. I had a conversation actually with someone who used to work for Warrington last week or a week before, and they were saying that Warrington had identified that they only had X number of under 12s in their database or whatever. And obviously they went on a big drive to, they do the kid for a quid thing and you've got to sign up and then they've got the details and stuff like that. And they've pushed that number up to a decent level now. I think it's difficult for the non-Super League club. I mean, it's hard for Super League clubs, but I think the visibility of Championship is next to none. Doesn't get any coverage. I don't think the Championship clubs or the Championship as a collective really doing anything to engage with the younger audience? Probably not. You don't really see clips of tries so much, or, you know, none of them are on all that TikTok, all that. I mean, I'm a bit long in the tooth for it, but there's not that talking point necessarily as there is with Super League. And that's an issue. And I think, but again, that's not just a Widnes issue. That's everyone. It's far too expensive at Widnes. That's another issue. The ticket prices for kids are ridiculous. Kids have to, if kids under 12 or whatever, they've got to bring an adult with them anyway. Yeah. So to be trying to get so much money off them for what is part, let's get it right, it's part-time rugby league. You can watch non-league football, which is part-time. Kids get in for £2 or £3. That's almost an alternative. That's what you're competing against. And like I say, I know people say about free tickets. I don't really believe in free tickets myself. I'd rather make it cheaper all the time. Because giving someone a free ticket one week and then saying it's £12 the following week, it's just not going to work. But yeah, I mean, I think Widnes have obviously got to do something about it. But at the same time, I do feel like they're a little bit hamstrung by the wider game. Whether you could say, well, should Widnes be leading the way in terms of how a Championship club should operate and how they should target you could make that argument. But it's just like simple things like Super League's on, and everyone talks about Super League, but I bet if you, I remember having a meeting with Carl Fitzpatrick and he didn't have a clue what was going on in the Championship. And I think that's also a problem in rugby league, is that everyone's so focused on Super League that they don't actually have a clue what's going on in Championship. And it's like, would it kill anyone to read out the Championship results as well as the Super League ones? You know, little things like that that would at least give you a little bit of visibility. You know, you're never on TV, whereas the flip side of that on the Super League, you've always got it. I think the Rugby League video game's an interesting one. Like, my son plays that now, and he knows NRL players. And it's like, he doesn't watch the NRL. He's never engaged with it before. But all of a sudden, he knows names of NRL players from doing that. And you can play as the Championship teams on there as well. But it's a lot of things like that that you want to try and get it into the conscience a bit more. And that's what you're lacking. But I think also, there's not just kids. There's probably maybe our age, well, more so your age than mine now, but between 20 and 40-year-olds who I think are probably disenfranchised by the sport because of the way it is, and people who understand it a bit more, and the IMG thing and not being promoted. And if you could get promoted on the pitch, Widnes's crowds last season would have been far higher than they were, because Widnes were up there. You know what I mean? And I don't care what anybody says to me, that would have 100% happened. You'd have got more media, you'd have got more coverage, you'd have been banging the drum a bit more. So I think there's a little bit of that as well. There's apathy. People my age, like, I mean, I know plenty of people who used to go who just don't bother anymore because the Widnes have been relegated twice, they've been in administration twice, you got shafted by the RFL once, you got shafted by the RFL again. Now there's no promotion. It's like, one of them things puts somebody off, but for them all to happen, it puts them off even more. So, I mean, look, everyone needs to get younger fans in. It's the same everywhere, but certainly the ticket prices for kids need to be much lower.
And just on the back of ticket prices, obviously, people will be aware by now, there's obviously a fan ambassador group, and, you know, we are banging the drum and working with the club on that. We don't have any details to give out yet, but we are definitely putting that forward that there needs to be a change in that department. Kev Buck in particular is very vocal about it, so I'd just like people to know that this is getting fed back, and hopefully come next season we will see different things being tried as the season goes along. And certainly alongside the community clubs, West Bank and Alton Hornets in particular, at the hub of our community, tapping into that and ultimately trying to stop our kids going to watch St. Helens, Warrington, getting them at the DCBL or whatever it will be called in the future.
The other thing as well is there's nothing for kids really at the game, you know. And like, I'm probably not the right person for this sort of conversation, because I only go to the rugby to watch the rugby. I'm not bothered about the food. I'm not bothered about the drink. I'm not bothered about what's on the pitch. I'm not bothered about any of that. But I understand that there's a large percentage of people that are. It's like little things like football league clubs are really good at this. Like, I took my son to watch Preston last year sometime on a Tuesday night, and they've got like a community room inside the stand, and it's got like table tennis in, table football, FIFA on the PlayStation and stuff. And so it's like, you get to the game an hour before, the kids have a little bit of a play around in there, and then right, 3 o'clock, kicking off, right, come out. And it's like, I went Rochdale the other week, football, and they've got a similar sort of thing there, where there's a little bar and there's an adjoining room. And it's like, and again, it's not just a Widnes thing. Are the club doing enough of that sort of thing to engage with kids when they're at the ground? Or is it a case of, well, they come and they sit on a seat and then they go home? And obviously Kemmick does his little bit, which is great. And that's the main thing that would engage with them. But it's like little things like that I think, if you could set something up like that in the concourse of the North Stand or somewhere, I don't know, a couple of PlayStations in, or throw the ball through the hoop thing, or whatever. Huddersfield actually used to do it outside their one of their stands at some point. Just little things like that that engage the kids a little bit more than at the moment. They just come, they watch the rugby, they go home. There's not really much more going on for them.
No, I totally agree, James. And, you know, I think if you was to score witness on across match day experience, things for kids, the experience itself, taking away the product on the field, it's not good enough, and it needs to improve. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And again, that is something I can say I have said to Stuart Murphy, when as have other people. So it's been brought to their attention, and look, it's up to the club and to improve that ultimately, to get these, you know, kids especially and people in general, you know, to the game. And like you highlighted there, James, you know, it's just mine and your opinion, you know, doing this podcast, but everybody who goes to rugby, there's different ideas of what a match day experience is for different people. So it's important to be trying different things all the time. The next one is about squad balance, and what are your thoughts on re-signing so many of the current squad, given that we have missed out on the playoffs?
I touched on this on the, was it the McWhirter one? The thing I actually think you need to keep a big portion of your squad, because I just think the player market's not there, the player pool's not there. It's a lot easier to find three or four to add to your squad. And don't forget that if you find someone better, and I'm not advocating getting rid of anyone, if you find someone better, then you move someone else on, or it just pushes them down the list. And I think that's what people have got to get to. Like, we've just got 18 players now. They might sign six players, and player 18 now might become player 24. Because the six players that they've signed are better than player 18. They might sign six players that are better than player 10, and all of a sudden, player 11 becomes player 18. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's what people have got to understand. The player pool's not there. And actually, you need to keep the decent players that you've got, because there's not a guarantee that you release player X and you find somebody better. And like I say, I've said before, like with the Lawton situation, like Lawton, Adam Lawton as an example, is a player who should always play for Widnes, regardless of who else that they've got. And he might be the starting prop one year, he might be on the bench next year, but he is the Lawton, Owens, Gilmore, whatever. Chapelhouse, another good example. Players like that should always form the foundation of your squad. And then your recruitment is all about signing Jordan Abdul, bringing the Aussies over, and spending your time on that, rather than getting rid of someone like Jay Chapelhouse, as an example, and trying to find someone to replace him who's moderately better than him, when you could have just had him and signed that better person anyway and just pushed him down the pecking order a little bit. And that's my position on it anyway.
Yeah, and I think this is a unique season as well. I think it's also important to understand that we still don't know what Super League's going to look like, who's in there, and the same with the Championship. We don't even know what country Toulouse are going to be competing in yet. So I think the club have probably done the right thing, keeping hold of a good core group of our squad who will be here in the Championship, and they're already gelled. I think what that then does is the recruitment drive that we're going into, I am of the opinion that them four, five, six players coming in, they need to be of a good quality. They do, because I understand what people are saying. We've retained such a big chunk of that playing group, and ultimately they was all there this season, and we haven't made the playoffs, and that is the target, and that does need to change. But I think that's where these four, five, six players coming in, but that is where I'll be really focusing on. And I've got to be honest, James, I'm not going to name names, but the whispers and rumours I've heard, if they come off, like we've seen today, Jordan Abdul, there's some exciting things going around. And hopefully, if we can get more of them signings into the club, that will raise the bar. But I must admit, I think there was one or two retentions I was scratching my head at. I think when you look at Danny Langtree as a back rower in the Championship, when he's on the field, he puts fear into the opponents, aggressive going forward, scores tries, aggressive in defence. But his injury record over the last two, three seasons to reward him with a two-year deal, that I did scratch my head at a little bit. Nick Gregson getting a two-year deal again, when remains to be seen whether Lewis Hall stays at Widnes. He wasn't announced as leaving, so I know he had a clause anywhere he could take up another year. You've got Gregson. Gregson for 2 years. I don't know, James. I just feel with Nick, and I don't want to get at him, because I don't like talking about individual players, but you want to see more from him. He takes the ball to the line and feet. He shapes our attack and he gives it to the halfbacks, but he'll go off after 20, 25 minutes and then he'll come back on. And you just want to see a little bit more, if that makes sense, especially when our attack, it's not been the best for two seasons, has it? And them positions are important to improve that.
What else we got, Mike?
I'm just having a look through. What do you feel the season ticket numbers will look like next season? Do you think they will dwindle from this season? It's difficult to say, isn't it, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea what level they were at. I think given the nature of rugby league, I think it's difficult to be... I think it's difficult to... what's the right word? To expect for it to go up for Widnes, because I think all the noise is around rugby league is, to the teams outside the Super League, is negative. You know, yeah, Widnes have applied for Super League, but chances are you're not going to get into it. There's not that focus. Some of the things we've already talked about, there's not that focus on the games and stuff. There's not that excitement. Like I say, if you'd have turned around and said the top two teams next season will get promoted to Super League, you've all of a sudden got a massive sell. Support us on our bid for Super League. The top two teams next season are going up. Buy your season ticket now. You've got a sell. You've got something that people can buy into, whereas at the moment, and especially now at the moment, because you don't know what's going on. We don't even know how many, we don't even know exactly how many home games there's going to be. No. You don't know who you're going to be playing. I was a little surprised the season tickets went on sale myself this early. But I get that there'll be cash flow and issues like that need to be considered. But yeah, I think I honestly have no idea. I think crowds have seemed to have gone up this year in terms of what they've announced, whether that matches up with the official IMG figure, I don't know. Because if you remember last year, they said at the IMG, the thing that at the club after the IMG, that although they'd been announcing whatever figure, their actual real average was 1,900. Sure. I don't know whether they've been doing that still. I don't know.
The last one is, somebody has heard a rumour that we will still be dual registrationed with Warrington. Now, before you go, James, I'd be astounded if we're still with Warrington. It made me laugh, actually, because I was going through the website the other day, sorting it out in the background, and I seen, I think, a post from you, 2020, an article that you wrote questioning whether dual registration would work or not for Warrington. And here we are in at the back end of 2025 with it not really being answered. Or, well, it has been answered, and in my opinion, it's a resounding no. I don't think we've had really a successful season ever, really, dual registering with Warrington. If it was down to me, it'd be a definite no. And I think I think Alan has shown he's got enough contacts with other clubs to get decent loan signings from here, there and everywhere, rather than just focusing and utilising one club's players.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is that Widnes are obviously in a funny situation where you want to have your own players, and ultimately, if all their own players are fit, they don't need the dual reg. Whereas clearly the clubs offering players on dual reg want them to play, hence why they're offering them on dual reg. With due respect to some of the other teams like Swinton, whatever, back in the day, not Swinton haven't used it so much anymore, but when St. Helens would offer them four players, we'd be like, yeah, we'll take them. Whereas the Widnes aren't like that. And I think that just causes friction. And by the way, I think Widnes should be like that. But as you identified there, I think Alan Coleman's probably identified this season that he's had better success when he's brought players in on loan, like John Bennison, like Will Roberts, like Jack Bibby. I mean, even earlier on in the season, like when Noah Hodkinson played and Josh Hodgson and players like that, you were getting more joy out of players like that than you were off the Warrington players. I think only really Max Wood was the only one who consistently played. Luke Thomas probably would have played a lot more, but he just so happened to break into the Warrington team and you didn't get him. I'd be very surprised if it still is with Warrington. It'd be interesting whether Widnes do bother having a formal partnership with anyone, or whether they go down the loan route.
I think as well that for me, the final nail in the coffin, where if I wasn't laughing, I'd have been crying, was the Ollie Leyland situation, where you're getting the rug pulled underneath you because rumour has it a coach hasn't had his player playing in the position he wants him to play in. And it's like, you can't run a professional rugby club having to please another team's coaching where you play a player. I think for me, that kind of said it all. And I think that was, like I've just said, the final nail in the coffin for me. But it will remain to be seen whether we do take them up on another partnership. But I just can't see it, James. I think what you've just said there is bang on. I think that will be the avenue that we'll go down, but we'll see.
Right, so thanks everyone for your questions this week. Do keep sending them in on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page and in the comments and wherever you listen to your podcast. Me and Michael get our heads together to see what we want to do in the coming weeks. Good luck to the women's team this weekend, and we'll see you next time.